One, two, three. Greetings and welcome. Happy Juneteenth, everybody. This is the final episode of Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show. My name is Sri Srinivasan, and it's been the honor of a lifetime to be your host for this show. Saturdays on WBAI for these last 15 months have been an incredible learning experience for me and very humbling to learn and share and talk to awesome folks from around the world. We have had such great guests and we've had such great listeners and such great callers. And as we mark Juneteenth and we mark the end of this show, we want to hear from you. We hope you'll call in and talk to us. We'll be on till the end of the hour, and we'll get a chance to hear from you as well as we did every single episode. We have so much to talk about. I have to say I am emotional at this moment because we are saying goodbye, and also because the pandemic is not over. There's still so much for us to do. You should know that taking over this time slot starting next Saturday is Arthur Schwartz, a name and voice so many of you already know from his show at 5 p.m. on Mondays, advocating for justice. You'll be now able to hear him every Saturday at noon Eastern. And we'll bring Arthur on at the end of the show to say hello to all of you. Now, let me just reflect for a moment on what we have done this past year. 55 episodes, 15 months. 166 guests. We talked to New Yorkers and listeners during the deepest, darkest days, relying on experts, science, and hope. I'm grateful to every guest, every listener, and every caller, especially the ones who called in just to argue with us. You all made this show. A big thank you to WBAI Program Director Linda Perry for asking me to do this show and for all her support. A big thank you to our engineers, including Sean Rhodes, who's on with us now, Giovanni Anglin, Catherine, for making this show come together and for making the show happen, making the magic happen in the studio, while I got to be very comfortable in my Upper West Side home doing the show. They went in at the worst times for New York City because the show must go on and all the shows must go on. So a reminder to please support progressive radio in New York by supporting WBAI. Please make a donation, WBAI.org. They have such great shows all throughout the day and we want your help to support them. A big thank you to my friend Lisa Herndon for live tweeting every episode at The Standouters is her Twitter handle, and she'll be tweeting now. We'll be joined in a couple of minutes by two very special friends of mine, Mary C. Curtis, columnist, writer, who has given us great insights into the political aspects of the pandemic, but has so much more to share with us. She'll be returning. And as will my very first guest on the very first episode, Bob Anthony will be here, tech and travel journalist. He's at New York Bob, so they're standing by and you'll get to meet them. But I do want to tell you that one of the reasons this was such a special treat for me to make this show this past year was that I got to work with my then 16-year-old son, who's now 18 because his birthday is so close to the start of this show. My son, Krishna, who was in lockdown with his parents and his twin sister for the pandemic, he volunteered to produce the show with me and ended up booking all the guests, doing the scripting, music selection, and so much more. It's been a life highlight to be able to spend this time with him and to have this chance to work together. So I've asked Krishna, who recently turned 18, to share his thoughts about being on the show. So hi, Krishna.
Hi, it's really been a pleasure to be part of the show for the past 15 months. I've learned so much. I'd say I'm a much more well-informed person thanks to, you know, weekly episodes where we just talk about current events. We have so many different fantastic guests on the show. We have callers in who agree with us, who disagree with us, but no matter what, I'm always learning each week, and I'm so glad for the opportunity to be on the show. And thank you to WBAI. Thank you to Linda. Thank you to Giovanni. Thank you to Sean and everyone who made this possible. And I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Krishna. It was great to work with you. And I learned so much. Even as New York City and America open up, there's still work to be done. So many Americans refusing to get the vaccine and so many billions around the world waiting for the vaccine. So much work to get back on their feet, to fix America's infrastructure, to prep for the next crisis. We've called the call-in show Hopeful and Hopeful and Helpful, even though things were so bad when we launched in March 2020, because I knew that by pulling together, New Yorkers could get past it. What I didn't know was the toll would be 600,000 dead in the U.S. and the politicization of everything. Well, let's bring on two of our guests to help us understand what we've gone through this past year and where we're headed. Let's bring on my friends, Mary and Bob. Hi, folks.
Hi, Sri.
Good afternoon, Sri.
And it's such an honor to be on your last show. I'm a little bit emotional myself.
Well, thank you.
Same
That's
here.
The great Mary C. Curtis, journalist, columnist, political observer, commentator. She was with us when we spoke within hours of the death of John Lewis, the great John Lewis. Mary, thank you so much for being here. And let me say hi to Bob Anthony. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon, Sri. Always a pleasure to be on your show. And it's always, it just like your son was saying, it's been an uplift these last few months just to have something steady and positive to talk about.
Thank you. And Bob is a wonderful journalist, a tech writer, a travel writer. Didn't get to travel this whole pandemic, but I'm looking forward to him going out. One of the things I said, Bob, to my wife is once Bob starts traveling, we know the pandemic is truly over, because you've been very careful, Bob, this whole crisis, haven't you?
Yes, I have. And it's funny you say that. I was filling out my schedule this week, you know, for the different meetings that I have coming up. And when I got to the auto show, I got to the line that said location, and I wrote in Javits Center. And I was like, oh, my goodness, it's not a website. I'm actually putting down a place where I have to be. So it's a good feeling to be moving about again.
And thank you, Bob. I want to say just a shout out to the Javits Center, because that's where my twins, you met Krishna, his twin sister Durga, that's where they got their vaccine. And the operation there was so precise and fast and efficient. I was so impressed by them. So this is a chance for me to thank our healthcare workers, our frontline workers, who did such an incredible job this whole year. We're very grateful to all of them. But we also want to note that today is Juneteenth, so I would like Mary to put some context around what this means, that suddenly we have another federal holiday. We all know that it took decades of hard work to make the Martin Luther King holiday happen, fierce opposition by lots of folks, and there was a movement to make Juneteenth a federal holiday, but at least to a layman like me, not in the fracas of the politics, Mary, it felt like it suddenly happened. Obviously, the George Floyd killing and the national reckoning after that has had a lot to do with it. Your thoughts?
Well, I think, I'm an African-American woman, and many African-Americans have very reflective feelings about this holiday. Of course, we want to give all props to the activists like 94-year-old Opal Lee, who has been fighting for so many years. As you say, things that seem to happen overnight, obviously they don't. People have been working, and she is an African-American woman and activist who has been working for it. And, of course, I think it's interesting because this is one of those holidays that some people did not really know about, black and white or other races, but many have seen this day, of course. It's a sad day in some senses because it marks when a Union general and black troops went to Galveston, and they were able to inform enslaved men, women, and children that they really had been freed by the Emancipation Proclamation 2.5 years before that. And whites and slaveholders had intentionally kept that information away. So you had people who were living in enslavement, people who died in enslavement who didn't have to. And so, in a sense, it's sad to have that reckoning. And I think that it's good that people are seeing this and marking it. But we also have to say that, you know, many Republicans who voted for to make this a federal holiday, in a sense that was an easy vote because it says this is relegating something to the past, enslavement, and we have gone so far. But these are some of the same folks who do not want to investigate the January 6th insurrection, who will not even consider a voting rights bill that so many, including John Lewis, one of their colleagues, for whom one of the bills is named, it's the For the People Act and the John Lewis Act, that will protect voting rights, so much of which was curbed with these state laws that came into being after the Supreme Court in 2013 invalidated parts of the Voting Rights Act, which was only in 1965, and it was a long time coming, and folks have been fighting against that ever since. And we still see so many disparities. We saw with COVID and health care that you've talked about and covered so beautifully, the disparities in the number of vaccines and deaths, and we still are grieving that even as we're coming out of it, and we saw disparities in the health system, in education during our year of virtual learning, who had broadband and who did not, in economic deprivation, who were the essential workers. I just did a show on my Equal Time podcast that was on black maternal health, I had Dr. Marcela Nunez-Smith of the White House Task Force on Equity. And black women, irregardless of income or education, are three times more likely to die still of pregnancy-related issues. So, yes, this is something to mark, and a day we hope not just to have sales, but also we have to see whether it's criminal justice, housing, so many other things, that we have a ways to go. Even as so many people are fighting against teaching the lessons in school about what Juneteenth means, about the systemic racism that still plagues us today that came out of the Tulsas and the Juneteenths. So I think it is a time for reflection, but also a time to really think about what this means moving forward, that we can't close the book. It's a beginning, but it's not an end to some of the crises we still face. But I do still want to give Ms. Opal Lee and all those folks their props.
Thank you, Mary. So beautifully put. Bob, your thoughts as you're listening to this and as you're observing, what does Juneteenth mean to you as an African American yourself?
Well, Mary is right. It's not the end of the road, and it has been a long time coming. I remember when I was still a reporter in Milwaukee in the 1980s for the old Milwaukee Sentinel, I was assigned to cover a Juneteenth Day celebration. So we're talking 1987, 1988, and the celebration they had on Milwaukee's north side, which was the African-American side of the city, I guess, was fairly big. I was not aware of this history, and it was a kind of a eye-opening. So while it might have seemed to others that this day came out of the ether, just sort of out of the blue, a lot of people, as Mary correctly points out, Opal Lee, have been working on this for a long time. And she's right in terms of the pushback that we're getting from some parts of the American community in Republican legislatures rolling back voting rights, basically, passing laws that severely restrict the ability to vote or register to vote. And when it comes to critical race theory, we have people like Texas Senator Ted Cruz calling it the equivalent of the Klan. And inherently racist in itself. So we have these crackpots, and I don't mind calling them that, basically giving a different narrative which has really no basis in truth. So as we celebrate Juneteenth Day this weekend, it's believe me, this has been a good week for me. I feel really good about this. But we do have a ways to go, and we do have to keep doing the good work. And what did John Lewis say? Good trouble.
Good trouble. And I just want to reflect on John Lewis for a minute, because this is part of this year that we've had together on this show, the election results, the final decision that he had won, the final accounting for Joe Biden. Happened at about 11:37 a.m. We were on the air at noon, and our program director, Linda, made sure that we had great guests live as we went to the city in Times Square to hear that great excitement. But earlier, on an earlier Saturday in the summer, I came on the air for about 10 hours after the passing of John Lewis, and Mary was with us. So let's talk for a minute about John Lewis and what he would have made of this year. He obviously lived through some of the pandemic, but then we lost him, Mary. You had a chance to interview him and get to know him a little bit.
Yes, such an honor to have your coverage folks like John Lewis, Elijah Cummings. We also obviously lost him, and James Clyburn, who was on my show, and he's still in there fighting the good fight. But Congressman Lewis, yeah, he was such an optimist in so many ways, and he had to keep fighting because he was a young man in his 20s. He was marching across that bridge, the Edmund Pettus Bridge, really getting his skull cracked open, trying to fight for the rights of all Americans and voting rights. And it's kind of ironic that he was still, as a congressman, trying to make sure that he could protect those rights. But at the same time, he also, as he said, he wrote a book for young adults. He was a hero to all generations. Politicians, even his colleagues who disagreed with him, respected him. It really did my heart sad to know that one of the things that the insurrectionists and rioters destroyed when they went to the Capitol on January 6th was an exhibition for honoring John Lewis. And it just shows, as I said, I look at all parts of it. But he himself, obviously, he was someone who was an inspiration to all generations for the fact that he was optimistic. He believed in good trouble, and he never gave up that. And I think that his colleagues in Congress need to think of him maybe a little bit more and have some of that spirit as they are trying to move the country, we hope, forward, instead of some of this infighting and, I think, trying to move the country backwards in some ways.
There was a beautiful tweet by someone who said, someone outside America who said that America was always about the future, and now looking on from the outside, it looks like America is all about the past and fighting the past, and that's really sad. Folks, you're listening to the final episode of Coping with COVID-19. I'm your host, Sri Srinivasan, Marshall Loeb, visiting professor of digital innovation and the co-founder of DigiMentors, a social and digital media consulting company. So grateful to all of you for being here with us live, as well as those of you who listen to us on WBAI in the program archives. We'd love to hear from you, 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your questions, anything you'd like to discuss. You can email me, Sree@sree.net. My Twitter handle is @Sree. And of course, please follow @WBAI and please support WBAI Progressive Radio in New York, 99.5 FM. Just go to WBAI.org and we'd love to bring you on the air and talk to us this final time. And at the end of this show, we will introduce you to Arthur Schwartz, who many of you already know, and his show, Advocating for Justice, which will take over the slot starting next Saturday. Let's go to Bob, who is Bob Anthony, a terrific reporter, journalist, columnist, lives in Brooklyn. Bob, walk us through what it was like those first few days, and how did you get through all of this? What were some of the highlight moments in this year for you that you will tell folks, you know, a decade from now?
I mean, like for everyone else, the beginning of it was just so all-encompassing. I mean, I couldn't believe the news that was coming out of the hospital in Queens. I believe it was Elmhurst, which didn't have the space, didn't have the ventilators, didn't have the people. It did have the people, but they were just overwhelmed. So every day was depressing just to listen to a piece of the news, much less the entire broadcast. But shows basically people sticking together, either through listening to shows like this one or just calling their friends, seems to be what worked. I mean, for me, it was watching the evolution of other people and how they handled it. I have one friend who shoots gymnastics worldwide, actually, and she's been able to keep up her photo skills over this pandemic. I have another friend who discovered that her grandfather was a famous taxidermist, and she's actually doing a lot of research and getting that story out, a black taxidermist, not too many of those. And another friend who was a preschool teacher, and now that the preschools weren't operating, she furthered her education. So watching people evolve and keep going through the thick of this terrible pandemic was uplifting. And as for myself, I just picked out projects and improved my tech as a big, you know, I'm a geek, so that's what I do, and went from the first show where I was talking to you on earbuds and my phone, to right now, where I have a nice big blue microphone mic in front of me, and I'm talking through the computer. So I've upgraded necessarily because I needed to, and that's what's kept me going through this few months. Just the community, I guess. I have to thank my community, my family, my colleagues, etc.
Thank you, Bob, and you are part of my community, so big thank you to you for all the work we've had a chance to do together. Everyone, please follow at New York, all spelled out, Bob, New York Bob on Twitter and other platforms, and he's also on Pinterest, where he has a million followers and posts some great stuff, so please check him out there. Mary, over to you. How did you get through this year, and what are things you will remember a decade from now?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I mean, this week, for my husband and I went to the opening night preview of Immersive Van Gogh in Charlotte, and there was a party out in the courtyard, and it was the first big gathering where no one was wearing masks, and it was almost like a revelation. It was crazy, but I started out, there was a lot of fear, of course, a lot of the unknowns in the beginning of the year, and because you're a journalist, you're looking at every single thing, following every lead. And, you know, as the year went on, I missed, of course, family and friends for the most part. I miss my beloved arts, which is such an antidote to the politics I do sometimes. You really realize the things you miss, the gym, although the teachers started teaching online virtually. I really appreciated the essential workers who were out there. You know, I'm going to the market at 6 in the morning. No one's there, but there are people there stocking, many people of color, remembering my own father who had those kinds of jobs. And then for me professionally, it's sort of like with Bob. It seemed to be one of the busiest years I ever had because of the political scene, because of all the turmoil. It's a year in which my roll call columns, I started to write more. I actually, through CQ Roll Call, launched the podcast, Equal Time with Mary C. Curtis, and there was so much to talk about because of this year of turmoil. So it kept me so busy that, and my husband, who's retired, was incredibly supportive. He helped me. He's a computer information guy, so the tech skills in setting up my dining room as the studio, he was amazing. I also cooked a lot, perfected the pie crust from scratch, you know. And so it makes you appreciate that. But also, I miss my son. It was emotionally a roller coaster, but professionally a lot. And I do appreciate everything that the doctors, the essential workers, all of these folks who were incredible, incredible. And you really want to make sure that they are praised. As Bob said, when they were handling these people coming in and filled emergency rooms and they were exhausted, they really were always there. And so props to them. And it is just so great to be coming out of it. But we still have to say that 600,000 number is huge. And there are people who are grieving who don't really can't put it in the rearview mirror. And there were several people in my family who did have the illness, including someone close to me who almost went to the hospital. It was touch and go. She's fine. But it really does. Oh, it was a year like no other, emotionally and physically and all the rest. But I did have the work, and that, in a sense, did save me. And it was great to come on your show because you were doing something, and to hear your audience come back and forth with their questions, just knowing that there's a big community out there of people who really needed that information.
Beautifully put. Thank you so much, Mary. Folks, you're listening to Mary C. Curtis and Bob Anthony, Robert Anthony, as we talk on the final episode of Coping with COVID-19. We have about 25 minutes left. We'd love to hear from you. 212-209-2877. Just call in and we'll put you on the air. Bob, one of the things that Mary mentioned was the fact that there are all these essential workers, and we will suddenly learn that term, essential workers, frontline workers, but we don't pay those people as essential workers if they're really doing essential work. So that's one of the things I hope will change. She also mentioned her father, and I know that you never miss an opportunity to remember your dad.
Yeah, I mean, these essential workers, these people who had to do their jobs in whatever it was, construction, in the sanitation workers, I always felt for because they're out there handling contaminated stuff. And my father, he was a transit worker, as you well know, worked for the subway system. And, you know, those folks had to do their jobs. They're paid blue-collar wages. They know the job has to get done to keep the city moving, and they kept the city moving. So I have such, believe me, I have such gratitude when I think of it for what they've gone through and done to, you know, just to make sure that the rest of us can keep going, right down to the people from SHIPT, Shipt, who delivered my food from Target all these months. They made it possible because, as you know, I was afraid to go to the supermarket and be in crowds. They made it doable for me. So, yes, we need to remember these folks in many ways, financially as well. But yeah, Sri, I have to tip my hat to the folks who put it together when they had their own issues, their own families to worry about, too.
And, of course, it's Father's Day weekend, so shout out to your father and both your fathers. And we think of all the father figures in everyone's lives. All right, we have a caller. We're going to go on the air. Tell us where you're calling from and your name, please.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my
call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, beautiful. My name is Elle, and I'm calling from Long Island. And I just have basically 2 points that I'd like to speak on. You mentioned Juneteenth and, of course, the pandemic, coronavirus. Both have been quite enlightening. Now, enlightening, and it's given a question to many aspects in life that we basically take for granted in regards to the essential workers. The question that propped into my mind was workers that work in the hospitals, that work in the schools, that work in the supermarket, that drive the trains, the bus, the street sweepers. Then I said, aren't we all essential? Don't we all have an important job to help this city, this state, this country maintain and progress on? The garbage man who picks up the garbage. So then I asked, who thought of the word essential? Why are we trying to isolate a particular group? We're all essential, even the mothers, the daycare workers who take care of the babies, the fathers who go out and work, try to work, to get substance to support his family or the woman who does it. So we're all essential. We're all important. The other point that I'd like to just speak on briefly is some years ago, BAI had a program, and at that time, I believe the program, one of the producers was Bernard White. He had a program presented with Amy Goodman on a farm, I believe it's Midwest, in which a dairy farm, they had cows. There were two ladies there, two young ladies who were sisters. And the year was 32, in the early 30s. They were recorded at that time, I don't know how true it is. Well, not how true it is in time span, if someone else has basically been discovered, but they were noted at that time, 1932, as being the last enslaved Africans working on a farm, not paid, but basically worked and being owned by the owners of that milk farm, cow farm, or dairy farm. So when I note that Juneteenth is celebrated not just here in the U.S., but in the Caribbean, all over, and even Galveston, I think, Texas, where the black soldiers came and went in to tell the people, and then the general came in to say, yes, you're liberated. It's a, I'm sure, a happy for perhaps maybe a few minutes, but then the fear comes in. Where are you going to go? You have nothing that's yours. You have no money. You have only the clothes on your back. You don't have a place to lay your head. What are you going to do?
Thank you very much. We really appreciate your call. What very important thoughts. Now, Mary, your response as you hear that.
Yeah, I think her, first of all, the whole sense of we are all essential, I think that was a beautiful point that the caller made, because everybody does contribute. And we did see, you know, so many women affected by this pandemic who lost their jobs because they had to, how do they take care of their children while they're trying to learn at home? The, you know, child care is so expensive, but even before this, who do you trust in the pandemic? So it was such a dilemma for so many people. So it's basically, if you could get through this, you are essential. Everybody is doing their part. I think the term was used because so many of these people were so often looked at as invisible. As Bob said, the trash collector, they're always there. And now you see, oh, my goodness, our lives depend on it, the delivery people. And then, you know, as far as her second point, I think she also brought up the sense of, yes, we have this Juneteenth day, but what about the legacy of it? Once someone says, yes, you are no longer enslaved legally, is there support as you've worked all this, you know, worked to the bone without compensation? What is next? How do you keep going with your life? What does the country owe you after you've put so much sweat and blood into it? I think she was quite wise in her comments, and I really appreciated her call. Your callers always are so thoughtful, and I would like to remind them to please follow me on Twitter, at mcurtisnc3, because I really do want to continue these conversations even after your show is no longer on the air. You know you started something, Sri.
Well, thank you, Mary. mcurtisnc3. Please follow her, Mary C. Curtis, and at New York Bob. We also talked, Mary, we talked the night and the day after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. So that's worth discussing for a moment here as we think about Justice Breyer. And do you think that he should step down so that Biden will have a chance to appoint a Supreme Court justice, nominate a Supreme Court justice? We know that President Obama took Ruth Bader Ginsburg out to lunch in 2011 to talk about the transition, perhaps, or whether she would step down, and she didn't. And she did such great work on the bench when she was there. But of course, the history of America is now going to be different because she did not step down.
Well, you know, it's every person, it is a personal decision, obviously. The person has to make it, whether it's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she felt she had more work to do, or Stephen Breyer. But I think you have to realize that the time of the Supreme Court, if there ever was a time, which there really wasn't, that they're this neutral arbiter. Of course, they have their own partisan views. John Roberts, before he was on the court, was working. It was no surprise when he wrote the decision had the decision of striking down those portions of the Voting Rights Act with preclearance, because that was in his history. And we also know that the Senate minority leader, now, he hopes to be Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, had said, well, you know, during election year, you wouldn't put someone on the court. So he held up Merrick Garland's hearings. But, of course, voting had already begun when Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, died, and he felt no compunction about being hypocritical and pushing Amy Coney Barrett's nomination quite through. And he has made it clear in recent interviews that if the Republicans retake the Senate, that he would probably hesitate to actually confirm or bring any of Biden's nominees or nominations to a hearing, and he would feel no need to do it. So he's been clear about the politics of it. So when they make these decisions, they can't be up on cloud nine talking about ideally this is how we have judicial decisions. This is hard politics, and I think that the justices, Breyer, would have to think long and hard about that. Remember when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, she had said through her family that she hoped that they would hold off until the new president was elected. And, of course, they didn't do that. Her last wishes were not respected. So this is politics, and we have seen that this is going to affect people for generations. If you think about it, there are quite a few justices on the court who were appointed, including the last three, by people who did not win a majority of the popular vote, these presidents. So people are representing, and it's something to think about. So
now we know that there's not true
food for thought.
It's not true representative democracy in America. We know that. I'm just going back and reading one of my tweets that I wrote at 7:33 p.m. I said, what a loss on September 18th. What a loss. An amazing life and career that changed America in so many ways. R.I.P. R.B.G. And then I said, let's hope Trump and McConnell don't try to force a successor through in these last weeks left before the election. And then my next tweet, it didn't even take him 2 hours. Senator Mitch McConnell said he would move forward quickly to appoint a nominate a replacement. Just incredibly hypocritical. And that's why if Justice Breyer thinks that the judges are not partisan, he is wrong, and America will suffer if he doesn't step down. But this is the reality we live in now. Let's move on, folks. We have just a few more minutes before we say goodbye to our guests. I want to ask Bob about your advice to folks who are not getting the vaccine, who are hesitant about it, who are, we say that that people of color, some of them are hesitant, but we learned from our guest last week, Professor Jamila Michener, who said that the number one factor that keeps that says you're likely to not take the vaccine is you're a white Republican male. So it's not that just people of color aren't taking it. So your thoughts on that?
Well, there's a lot of misinformation going around, some of it linked to religion, I'm afraid. I have relatives who we've been texting through this pandemic, and I have at least one relative who flat out said in a text, vaccines are bad. Please don't do it. And I can't actually get into a conversation there because it won't go anywhere. So that's very disheartening to me when I hear things like that. And in certain neighborhoods, I keep hearing the same phrase, I'm going to wait and see. There's no waiting or seeing left here. We're basically out of time. We need to wrap this up. So, right, it's not a white male thing, although a lot of the the talk that came out of the previous presidential administration made it harder to sell people of color a vaccine. They made it seem like it wasn't the best thing to do. But yes, we need to go out there. And if you're not vaccinated, you really need to do it right now. I felt so good this week being out in the sun in Bryant Park, vaccinated and maskless, eating a sandwich and watching other people doing the same. This is not the time for hesitancy. But just a quick thought on what Mary was saying in terms of the RBG. That was one of the dark days for me in the pandemic. When I was told that she had died, I knew what was going to happen. That's not the way this country should work, but politics is mixed in everything.
Thank you. And you were being cynical enough to know that this would happen. And I was trying to be naive, or I was naive to think that it would happen, but it only lasted 2 hours on that. So let's, as we get ready to bring on Arthur Schwartz in a couple of minutes, Mary, what makes, the title of the show is Hopeful and Helpful. What makes you hopeful for our country going forward?
Well, it's so interesting when Bob was talking about COVID, and we did have Vice President Kamala Harris. She stopped in South Carolina and Georgia in this part of the country to talk to people about, she went to clinics about getting this vaccine. And we see it's really more for parts of the country, which some parts of the country people are not involved in it as much. They are mistrustful. So that is hopeful in that we do have more of the doses out. And I'm glad that we are giving them to other countries, because this is a global pandemic and we can't isolate ourselves. So that is good. And I think that even people, what makes me hopeful, who are upset at some of the things that are going on. And I have to say, this voting piece, not only the restrictions, but also the new rules on who counts the votes, is very upsetting to me. I think people aren't taking this seriously enough. But you do see these activists on the ground. When the Texas Democrats walked out, they knew that that wasn't going to stall the bill forever, but they were bringing attention to something for the American people and doing what they could. The people are doing what they can to be proactive. And, of course, as someone who, I'm a journalist, I report on it, but you know I come from a family of activists. One of my brothers was arrested twice in the civil rights movement. So we have a tradition of, if you don't like something, you've got to get out there. As I say, I contributed to a couple of books. One's coming out covering politics in the age of Trump, and me and a few other political journalists from the Post and the Times and others. And I say to people when they say, I'm not interested in politics, I say, well, politics is interested in you, so you better get interested because it's going to affect your life. And maybe people are hearing that message. So I guess that's what makes me hopeful. We're not perfect, but we are fighting the good fight.
Thank you, Mary. Bob, how about you?
I mean, I'm trying to stay positive at this time. I'm trying to look forward, and shows like this obviously help. While I was looking for the live tweets for this session, I see that Condoleezza Rice just tweeted in relation to Juneteenth Day. And she mentions that they had no idea the journey ahead would still be long, dangerous, and arduous, and how far they had to go. But it was a day that we as a country got closer to being what we profess to be. It is an illustration that we are always working towards a more perfect union, that we may never get to the perfect, but we are always striving for it. This is the type of Republican we need today. This is a uplifting state, and it's not being practiced by the Mitch McConnells of the world. So looking forward, looking up, trying to stay positive, hopefully we can continue to do so.
I'd love to talk to Bob and Mary for hours, but this is my final few minutes, so I'm going to say goodbye to each of them. Bob, thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your wisdom and insights. We are so grateful to you at New York Bob on Twitter, the great Robert Anthony. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your shows help me breathe and relax. Thank you very much.
And Mary, what can I say? Thank you for being there at all the pivotal moments this past year. I've learned so much from you. I'm so grateful. The great Mary C. Curtis at M. Curtis NC3. Please follow her. And thank you very much, Mary.
Well, thank you. One of the highlights of this year has been getting to know you better and working with you. And I hope, as I said about justice, that this is the beginning, not the end of our association.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Now, folks, just a couple of minutes left. I want to bring on my successor on this time slot, but a veteran of WBAI and veteran of radio and a veteran of fighting for justice. Arthur Schwartz is with us. He's going to be hosting the show every Saturday at noon Eastern. I hope you'll all tune in and support him. And so welcome, Arthur, to your new time slot.
Thank you very much. And I'm sad to see you guys go. You really provided an important resource over the last year and a half. And, you know, you'll be missed. Hopefully we'll hear from you in other, you know, settings. And it doesn't have to be around COVID, but public health and the health care is such an important issue in our country, our city. I hope we hear from you again around those issues.
Thank you, Arthur. Tell us what we'll be hearing from you on the show and what we can expect.
So my show, which started, I think, July 2017 and went to July 2020, is a show where I interview budding politicians, people in office, and people who are movement activists. It sort of proceeds from the notion that to change society, we have to both be active and on our feet, and we also have to be involved in the political process, because we can protest all we want. If we don't have people in office who will enact the change that we want to see, then we're always trailing behind. And I had, you know, my first show in July 2017, I had this young woman named Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on, who had just decided to run for Congress, and look what's happened to her. She has the most Twitter followers of anybody in the United States, among other accomplishments. And so I'm looking forward to doing that again. And also having, as I said, I have movement activists, whether it's people around climate change, criminal justice reform, from the union movement, from the women's movement, lots of people who need places to have a voice. And that's what I try to provide. And I try to, you know, have them talk about, you know, what's going on now and how people can get involved. So I haven't yet decided what I'm going to do on my first show, because I want to see what goes on in New York City's elections that are Tuesday, the primary election, where we will be electing a new mayor. Maybe we'll get that person on the air. We'll be electing a whole bunch of new city council members. You should know the reason I got off the air is because I'm running for city council in Greenwich Village, Soho, Chelsea, and Hell's Kitchen. So I'll know, I may be hosting it as a city council member elect or a city council member not elect. But I'm hoping we can have some voices in the first few weeks of people who are new, fresh voices to give leadership here in New York City. And should also know I have to also be general counsel of Pacifica, which grew out of my fight in court to get WBI back on the air when it was taken off back in October 2019. And just without telling anybody what position, I want to make sure that any listener who is a member, that means you made a contribution of $25 or more, votes. There's a current bylaw referendum going on, and it's very important that people vote if we want WBI to continue to exist. And so I urge people to do that. So that's basically what we have in store coming up. I hope it's going to be very exciting. And whoever people want to vote for them. Make sure it's really important. Elections have consequences, as the election of Donald Trump showed, or the election of Biden showed, or the election of AOC showed. They not only have consequences, but sometimes the people you think can't win, win. And they play a pivotal role in changing things. Or even their voices, if they're supported by such a large number of people like Bernie was in 2016, his voice didn't win that year, but became a very dominant voice in the politics of the Democratic Party and in Congress and in the programmatic changes that now are accepted as gospel, at least among Democrats. And so I want to make sure that everyone that's listening figures out where they vote. You can go to findmypollsite.com or something like that.
So Arthur, could we just, since I have you, just make a pitch? Obviously, we'd love for people to vote for, you know, in your own election, but also just why everyone has to get out there and vote. And we just have about 30 seconds, but if you can just give us a plea to everyone.
Well, like I say, you look at the candidates, you see what programs they want. If some of them want to create mental health corps, they want to take police out of the schools. You want to elect people like that so that we depoliticize the treatment of people with mental health problems or our school system. Very important. And those people can implement the changes that so many of us talk about in WBAI. We can elect people. We can vote for people from mayor to controller to city council to public advocate. Jamani Williams has barely any support, but he's like a key person who, by the way, has endorsed me in my race, along with Cynthia Nixon. It's very important that people take elections seriously because they do have consequences.
Terrific. Folks, that's Arthur Schwartz, and you're going to be hearing his voice every Saturday in this time slot on WBAI. Thank you, Arthur. We wish you the very best, both in the election and in this time slot as you carry on making sure that justice is something we all advocate for. And folks, this wraps up.
Advocating for Justice.
Advocating for Justice is the name of the show.
And
we'll be on at noon Eastern every single Saturday here on WBAI. And let me remind everyone, please, please support WBAI. Become a member or make even a small donation makes a difference. I want to thank everybody who's been listening and supporting us for 15 months, 55 episodes, 165 guests, folks who have made such a difference in this city, understanding what is happening to the city, this country, and the world. I want to thank Linda Parr, who is the the program director of WBAI, and her team, including Sean Rhodes, Giovanni Anglin, our fantastic engineers who, in the depths of the crisis, would go into the studio and run the board and everything else that makes the magic happen. We're so grateful to you. So grateful to Lisa Herndon at The Standouters, who live tweeted every episode. And a final thank you to my son, Krishna, for being my partner in this. And to all of you, I wish you the very best. I know our city is going to get through this and going to continue to come out strong, but there's lots of work to be done. Please vote. I know the ranked choice voting is confusing, but please, please vote. It will make a difference. The city needs great leadership, and you can help define who those leaders are going to be. As for me, you can contact me, Sri@Sri.net, S-R-E-E, and my Twitter handle is @Sri. My Instagram is SriNet, and I'm just so grateful to all of you. On Twitter, I use a hashtag LifeHighlight, and this has been a true life highlight. So for the final time on the show, I'm going to call out for the Jay-Z song that is a great standard for New York City. Thanks very much, everybody. I am truly, truly grateful. Bye-bye.
Down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Bill. And I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata. Still sipping my top. Sitting courtside. Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out. I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from.
Good afternoon. You're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. Coping with COVID-19, a helpful, hopeful call-in show came to you for the last time over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio WBAI in New York. Coming up at 1 o'clock is a special edition of Equal Rights and Justice with Mimi Rosenberg. So please stay tuned.
This is WBAI New York. Listener-sponsored radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. And this is an